When Dick Button won the Olympics in 1952, he did so outdoors, practically in the dark. And this newsreel, recorded the morning after, when Dick Button performed his gold medal winning routine for the cameras in the daylight. Let's take a listen.
And then we put on skates ourselves and went out on the rink after him to catch the rhythm and motion of his free flight over the ice. No wonder Dick is many times national champion and twice Olympic champion, and a great guy to boot, Dick Button, USA.
Well, a lot's changed since then, and Dick Button joins us this hour to have a conversation about figure skating, the evolution of the sport, and his career. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Figure skating is one of the most popular spectator sports at the Winter Olympics, and perhaps you're glued to the television watching the events unfold in Sochi. You're welcome to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. You can also find us on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Dick Button is a two-time Olympic champion in figure skating, a five-time world champion, and a seven-time national champion. He's also the author of a new book called Push Dick's Button, a conversation on skating from a good part of the last century and a little tomfoolery. He joins us from the Argo Studios in New York City. Dick Button, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I'm laughing already because I think your introduction brought up so many things that I can be a little snarky about. So if you don't mind, I have a reputation for being somewhat snarky. And listen, at my age, I can say anything I want, and I don't care whether people like it or not. How's that for an introduction of somebody?
That means we're going to have a fun conversation today. And that's why I loved your book so much, because I hear your voice in every word that's written. I can tell that this is your thoughts purely and originally. So,
well, you know, when I wrote Push Dick's Button, I had been what I had done before was there was a very superb first-rate contract that a friend of mine had gotten for me at Simon & Schuster. And it was all about the history of skating and biography of my life. And the whole thing was, oh, my gosh, it was, you know, everything and everything. Mm-hmm. And I worked with another writer to create this. And I couldn't handle it because they kept interrupting other things and changing the line of the thought. So that's why I did this book. Because if that same friend of mine, when I asked her what she would like to hear, she said, I'd really like you to come and sit on the couch with me and tell me what the heck is going on. So that's what I did. And I've got to tell you, I had great fun writing Push Dick's Button. It was a very enjoyable occasion for me.
Well, that's great, and I can't wait to talk with you more about some of the topics that you bring up in that book. But first, let's talk about you, if you don't mind. How did you get into figure skating?
My brothers took me to a pond nearby when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I'm sure that my ankles were on the ground, on the ice, and I had such a fun time about it that I used to wear my old ski pants to school every day, just in case the ice hadn't melted, and my teachers were not very happy with that, and I was with it, and I became mesmerized by the sport of figure skating. You know, when all of us, or many of us, we never become really enamored with something. And when you do become enamored with something, I think it's a gift from God, no matter what it is, whether it was figure skating for me or whether it was painting or drawing or music or a particular sport or whatever. I just think it's a gift when you are blessed with an outright enthusiasm for something.
Mm-hmm. And you were 13 years old. I look at the skaters today and I hear them say things like, I started when I was four. You know, how did you catapult so relatively quickly onto the world scene starting out at age 13?
Well, I didn't really start out at 13. My mother gave me, she knew of my interest, and she gave me 10 lessons for the price of 9 at a nearby rink. And I had just such a wonderful time doing that. And they asked me to skate in a carnival. And the fortunate thing was I thought I was going to be asked to do a solo. Well, I was nowhere near good enough to do a solo on anything. And so I was part of this production number. And then my father happened to come by, and he heard the teacher say, he asked the teacher about my skating, and she said, oh, he'll never learn to skate until a snowball lives in Hades. Well, I mean, the one person she should not have said that to was my father. He could be like a bull when anybody challenged either him or his family not to be able to do something. So he immediately got me into New York City. By the way, I had taken my first test at 12, and I didn't even know what first tests were. And they said, little boy, don't start so close to the barrier. And I said, oh, I know what I'm doing. And then I promptly skated into the barrier. Of course, I failed the first test. And my parents then, after introducing me to a teacher in New York City, got me up to Lake Placid, where I met Gustav Lussi, who was really the most prominent and eminent teacher at the time. And I took my first lesson from him at 13, and also my first test, and both were successful.
Hmm. Tell us a little bit more about your relationship with Gustav Lussi, your coach, and some of the lessons that he taught you that carried you through your career.
Well, there's two different meanings to the word either what he played. One is a coach, and the other is a teacher. And I always referred to him as a teacher more than as a coach. He never demonstrated anything for us, although he could. And I've got to tell you, there's some really difficult, basically simple moves that I defy 99% of the skaters today to be able to achieve. And he would show us those, but it wasn't so for us to copy him. Many times, teachers today say, watch me and just do what I'm doing. He never did that. He always told you what the basic line of it was, what the basic conception of it was. How did you get – he was an ex-ski jumper. So he understood flight and movement and the sustaining of a lift into the air. He taught us to do things like delayed axles. Now, if there are any skaters in the audience, I will tell you that you don't often see a delayed axle. That means where you jump in the air and hold the position for as long as you can and then do the revolution and land. Now, an axle is only 1.5 revolutions, and a lot of people do achieve somewhat of a delay in a double or triple axel, but it's not essentially done anymore, and I miss it. I miss it. One of the problems is, for me, is that I've watched skating for so long and seen so many great skaters and so many great moments that I get very discouraged when I don't see, I see something done very well, but I've seen others do specific parts of that or elements or positions or whatever so brilliantly over the years. And of course, nobody remembers Ronnie Robertson, or who was one of the greatest spinners of all time, or Tenley Albright and so forth and so on. And it's just I have to deal with having seen so much.
Right. Well, and you carry that knowledge with you behind the commentator's booth, which you found yourself behind in 1960. Is that right?
Yeah, that was the 1960 Olympics in Squaw Valley, and CBS bought it. You know, I go into this in my book, Push Dick's Button, and it's great fun because it explains the part of commentating and narrating and all that sort of thing and what we can expect at the Olympics in Sochi. At any rate, CBS paid $50,000 for the rights to the Winter Olympics. Now I think I don't know how many billions they cost. Bud Palmer, who was an eminent host sportscaster at that time, was the host, and I was the expert commentator. Expert commentator meaning I was supposed to know what I was talking about, and that was why we were called an expert commentator. So I went to it. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, and neither did Bud Palmer. And I told him very clearly, I said, Bud, in skate, I liked him tremendously, and I said, Bud, in skating, we never call a jump a leap, and we never call a spin a twirl. Well, just at that moment that I got through explaining that, David Jenkins, who won the men's event in those Olympics, let loose with the most beautiful extended jump that I had seen. He had great knees, you know, just smooth as velvet when he skated. And I was so impressed with the jump, I just shouted out at the top, what a great leap. In other words, I had killed myself in the very first statement I ever made. And Bud just laid his 6'4" frame down on the table and guffawed with laughter. So much for not calling a jump a leap or a spin a twirl.
Well, I collected a little bit of a montage of you doing some commentary. I believe this is on behalf of ABC Sports, and I think we'll hear some trademark Dick Button here. Let's take a listen.
If that doesn't put a finizzle in her schnizzle, nothing else will. That was a terrible, terrible kind of spill. The worst that you can take.
Oh, good. Another catch foot.
You like those?
Well, I have to. We see so many of them.
He always keeps me riveted. But was there a program?
No,
of course not.
There wasn't a program.
There was arm movement and jumps.
Yeah.
In fact, it was once said about Fred Astaire, he can bamboozle you with his hands. And that's what he's doing. He's bamboozling us with his hands.
That's Dick Button doing expert commentary on figure skating, and we're talking with Dick Button this hour. You can call in and join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Dick Button is the author of a new book called Push Dick's Button, a conversation on skating from a good part of the last century and a little tomfoolery. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with figure skating legend Dick Button this hour about his new book, Push Dick's Button, and the evolution of figure skating. Do you watch figure skating? Do you look forward to it during the Winter Olympics? Have you lost track of what's going on ever since the implementation of the new judging system? You can call in with your questions and join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Dick, just before the break there, we heard some commentary that you provided for ABC Sports. And I'm wondering if you remember who you were talking about when you said he's bamboozling us with his arms.
Of course I remember it. That was Evgeny Plushenko, and I'm still saying that. Evgeny Plushenko is, as anybody watching skating and watching the Olympics knows, is a magnificent jumper. And he has a lot of pizzazz. And that the first time I saw him, I had fallen on the ice 12 years ago, and was in a hospital recuperating. And I couldn't get to the Vancouver World Championship in 2001. and he was there. So I watched it on television, and I was just impressed no end with him. I couldn't take my eyes off watching him, because he what he does is he was a magnificent jumper, a terrible spinner, and the rest of the time he kept really trying to cover up for everything and doing it with the most exciting kind of impact. And he actually bamboozled you. He had pizzazz. He didn't. You couldn't stop watching him, and that's still the case today. You know, figure skating is theater. And it always will be, even if the head honchos of the International Skating Union consider it first and foremost a sport. It is a sport, but it's also theater. And that is what creates our interest for it. My book goes into this, all of this point of view. And I think that the real point is that what kind of character and quality of skating are you doing? You know, if you're swimming a race, for example, your technique has to be superb. But in figure skating, you're not only your technique has to be superb, but you also have to have involved with it. You have to have an understanding of music. You have to have all of these kinds of things. It's an activity that is not only set to music, but it's enhanced by choreography and costumes, and it's imbued with original thinking, and it's sparked by performance. And no matter what anybody says, it should not be about that. It should not be in the Olympic Games. It is popular for just those reasons. So that's why it's remained the most important and watched event of the Winter Olympic Games, I think. You know, others can disagree with me if they like.
Well, and as we speak, the men, I believe, are performing, competing at the Olympics right now. We won't hear about it on network television here in the U.S. for a few more hours, but I know that events are unfolding live in Sochi right now. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you'd like to talk figure skating with Dick Button. Tammy in Crystal Lake, Illinois is on the line. Hi, Tammy.
Hi. I was just wondering what you thought of synchronized skating and why that is not an Olympic event. And I'll hang up and listen for my answer.
Thanks Tammy.
Well, number one, I think that synchronized, look, that team event that we just saw, that wasn't really a team event. It was a it was a country event. Every one of the individuals skating just did their program, the program that we're going to see later in the individual events. And so it wasn't a team competition. There was a team competition many years ago, and it ended, it was mostly in the 20s and 30s, and it was what was called a four, meaning four skaters would get together, and they would create new choreography and do that performance. And then there were other combinations of things like eights and 12s and 16s and so forth, which were not in competition but in exhibition. And it was great fun to see these things doing it. It ended really, it was revitalized right after the Second World War and ended about 1950. So to answer your question about why isn't synchronized skating a part of the Olympics, I suspect it will be in the long run. Remember, it will be a very expensive event because you'll have to bring as many as at least 16 people to the Olympics. That's a lot of it'll create a lot of Olympic gold medals. I got to tell you, they'll be flying around like fury. But it's a very interesting thing, and it is growing tremendously, synchronized skating, and it's fun to see.
Mm-hmm. Another element of figure skating that we actually don't see a lot of, or we don't see any of it anymore, are the actual school figures.
Well, figure skating used to be called fancy skating 100 years ago, 150 years ago. And the what it was people in those days in the 19th century all did figures, and they're wonderful examinations of the movement that they can do on ice, all kinds of twirls and giggles and grapevines and Maltese crosses and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's folk art at its best. And the only difference between it and penmanship is that you remember the folk art penmanship that you used to see in the 19th century? I'm sure we all remember that. The problem with the skating figures was that when the ice melted, it disappeared. In my day, skating of those figures, there were 64 variations on a figure eight. And they had in them things like three turns and double threes and rockers, counters, change of edges, loops, and all kinds of variations on that, both on the right foot and on the left foot. And when I skated in the Winter Olympic Games in 1948, those figures took 2 days to perform. Now, the reason that they went out eventually was that when television came in, nobody watched the figures, so the television network did not really cover it very well. They just show a snippet of it. Yet they counted for 60% of the total score in my day. Eventually, nobody watched it. They cost a lot of money. Television didn't cover it, and the eventually thing was that they disappeared and they were gotten rid of. I wrote a book in 1953 or so where I said that figures are not worth 60%. I saw no reason why they weren't at least 50% of the total score. Little did I know that they would reduce them in value, and then eventually eliminate them.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Dick Button. He's a 2-time Olympic champion in figure skating, a 5-time world champion, and 7-time national champion. His new book is called Push Dick's Button, A Conversation on Skating from a Good Part of the Last Century and a Little Tomfoolery. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Candy in Lake Mills is on the line. Hi, Candy.
Hi. Hi, Dick. Great to hear you.
Thank you.
I'm a figure skating coach, and I work here in Wisconsin. I'm just wondering, who is your favorite Olympic performer? Who can you think back over the years, which performance would you rate as your all-time favorite?
I will tell you right now, I can't answer that because there's no way I can tell you which song I like the best, which book I like the best, which garden I like the best. I can't answer that question because each and every one of those guys and gals who won or competed in the Olympic Games had something interesting in their program. How do you compare a Tenley Albright with a Peggy Fleming or a Dorothy Hamill? I can't. Each of them had their own unique quality. A great skater, and I point this out in Push Dick's Button, my new book, a great skater is someone who leaves the sport different and better just because they were in it. And that is what each of these people do. If you find somebody copying somebody else, they're not a great skater. So each and every one of these skaters had something interesting. And I was asked the other day, who's my favorite lady skater? And I said, listen, I said, I know which side of my which side my bread is buttered on. I like them all. There
right.
was no exactly. way. There was no way I was going to specialize in anyone.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the book.
Thank you, ma'am. I hope you enjoy it and have fun with it.
Dick, that kind of speaks to the evolution of the sport. What did it take for you? What was it that earned you the Olympic gold medal, I should say medals, in 1948 and 1952? And how does that compare to what you're seeing today, where in the men's competition, it's almost as if you don't have a quadruple jump nailed, then you're not going to be in contention for the gold?
Well, you use the word nailed. And there's a chapter in my book called A Request. It's about commentary. And there are two words I hope I never, ever use. One of them is called, it's amazing. I hate that word. I would lovely choke it if I could get my hands around its neck. The other one is, he nailed it. He nailed it. What does that mean, he nailed it? I always think that maybe it means that they got his tongue out and were nailing it into the ice. At any rate, I hope I never say it. And you just did. So
I'm sorry.
I don't have a future
in sports broadcasting, I guess.
No. You and I won't talk much about what jumps were landed or not. at any rate, the question was, you were asked a quadruple. Yes, look. Everybody is continuing to add to the revolutions and so forth. The problem with it today is that under the new judging system, and maybe we shouldn't get started into that too quickly, if you do a quadruple jump, you get a lot of points for it. And even if you fall on it, you can still get points. So I think that everyone will try to do that. The problem is that it takes so much energy to do that, and the rules reward that so much that it affects the rest of the program. That's the changes have been enormous in the sport. Number one, figures are gone. Number two, there are now requirements. You're only allowed to do three spins. You're only allowed to do so many jumps. I can describe for you right now the start of every program that we will see later tonight in the pair skating long program. And my book goes into this. If you watch the skater take the ice, they will probably all take the ice in somewhere near the center of the ice. And then they will do a few arm movements and a few steps, which suggests the quality of the music or the uniqueness of the music. A few arm movements and a few steps. Then they will take off and skate around the whole end of the rink, picking up speed. And then they will do their most difficult move or jump or combination of jumps. And that's true of the pair skating, too. You'll watch it time in and time out. Though that means it creates a cookie cutter type of program, and that doesn't. I'm not a fan of that.
Hmm. And what about a classy exit?
What about what?
A classy exit at the end of the program. We're seeing a lot of fist pumping and celebrating. But you were saying that years ago that this wasn't really the normal.
Well, put it this way. Even the NFL has calmed down the shenanigans that go on when a goal is made. It means one of the great things that you have to do as an audience is watch every second of what goes on and see how it affects you, what you see in the person doing it, and that is why I wrote a chapter called Entrances and Exits. And, when you turn on the camera thing tonight, you'll see the skaters coming into the building. You'll see the skaters warming up. You'll see the skaters warming up on the ice. And you can look at them and see how are they reacting? What kind of smile or what is their face doing? It's all about watching what happens to them. For example, this is a theatrical sport, and many skaters are just not thinking about what the audience is seeing as they're warming up. For example, can I read a section from my book? It starts about, did you ever have the opportunity to see one of the great dancers perform? Mikhail Baryshnikov, Rudolf Nureyev, Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, or the extraordinary English ballerina Margot Fonteyn. Each was a master of the entrance and the exit. When Margot Fonteyn entered the stage, She would float out from the wings and cross the stage as though she were tiptoeing on eggshells. She would pause for a nanosecond, settle right lightly into position. The conductor would raise his baton. The audience would hold its breath. The silence was complete, and the performance would begin. Now, both Nureyev and Baryshnikov each demanded your attention in their own way. Baryshnikov would burst on the stage like a fresh-faced schoolboy, eager to show you what he could do. He was like a relaxed everyman, accessible and quiet, yet commanding. He was in control, informing you about the dance you were about to see, and you became involved because of his mastery of steps and his animal-like movement and his calm demeanor. You were not assaulted by his presence. Nureyev, on the other hand, usually entered the ice like an emperor, unapproachable, slightly threatening, as though expecting us to do obeisance. One was almost assaulted by his put-offness. If we weren't paying attention to himself, of course we were mesmerized. So how do skaters enter into the old thing? I've got to tell you that there was a dear skater whom I loved very much, a Russian gal by the name of Irina Slutskaya.
Mm-hmm.
And Irina Slutskaya was a world champion, and she was the most fetching teenager in every sense, with the most perfect apple cheeks I've ever seen. I asked her once during an interview if I could pinch her cheeks, and she said, told me, smiling, "Oh, all the old men like to pinch my cheeks." Now, I probably shouldn't have, wouldn't have, or couldn't have said that today, but I like telling the story, and so she was just a dear with that. But when her moment came, she would enter through the half door in the hockey barrier and skate over to her coach, Zana Gramova. And then, in front of some 20,000 people in the arena and untold millions watching on television, what did she do? She blew her nose. Once finished, she'd adjust her dress and her pants, too, and then she would listen to her coach. Now, what the heck can the coach possibly tell a skater as they're about to step on the ice in the Olympic Games that they haven't already told them? I mean, it's like, forget it. I'm just reminding you, take a breath, don't fall, skate well, keep adjusting your pants. So at any rate, she'd skate around with neither. What did Irina Slutskaya did? She'd skate around with neither tension nor stretch in her body and with rounded shoulders looking down. What was she looking for? A four-leaf clover frozen in the ice? And then she'd slowly search for a place to begin, find it, then raise her arms into a starting pose, and lo and behold, smile. Hello. You know, that was not a humdinger of an entrance. I mean, one where you have the... Sonja Henie would have demanded that you look at her. She would have known exactly what she was doing, whether it was just touching the diamond pin she always wore on her at her throat or patting her hair. You've got to understand also that at the 1984 Winter Olympic Games in Sarajevo, Katarina Witt stood at the size of the – this is a different quality altogether – knowing that not only every man was in the audience was looking at her, but that every woman was too. Now, her coach, Jutta Müller, stood next to her, talking to her, but Katarina Witt clearly did not listen to what Jutta Müller had to say. She'd already heard it. But then she would give a most feminine pat to her hair and exuding confidence and sexuality and looking like she'd been budgeted with $1 trillion with no sequester in sight, skated out and instantly took her place, challenging us not to look at her.
Well, we are listening to Dick Button. He's the author of a new book called Push Dick's Button, a conversation on skating from a good part of the last century and a little tomfoolery. We invite you to join the conversation about figure skating. Do you look forward to the figure skating events each year, perhaps every 4 years at the Winter Olympics? And I wonder if you are planning to watch them this week as the individual events unfold in Sochi. You can call in with your questions questions, your comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with champion figure skater Dick Button about the sport, the art of figure skating. He's also a TV commentator for a long time, and now he's the author of a new book, Push Dick's Button, a conversation on skating from a good part of the last century and a little tomfoolery. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@WPR.org. Cindy in Belleville, you're on the line. What's your question or comment?
Thanks. I can't wait to read your book, Dick. What I wanted to say was about commentary. I know you're a very talented skater, but I think that you are a brilliant commentator and give highly intelligent commentary that helps us all learn more about skating. It's the kind of thing I'm not hearing on NBC, frankly, these days. I really appreciated your explaining, for example, the jumps, you know, what was the takeoff edge, what was the landing edge. It helps people to understand the technicalities, the intricacies of what's going on, and really come to appreciate skating more. Maybe some of this talk about whether or not skating is a sport would go away if people understood better how difficult some of these things are. And I wanted to thank you for that.
Thanks, Cindy.
Well, thank you.
You know, there is that debate. Is figure skating a sport or not? And I know that you have strong opinions on that. You shared some of them earlier. But also, when you talk about how the sport is open to subjective judging, for example, it's hard to combat the arguments perhaps that it's not a sport.
Well, you won't get me into that argument because I think it is a sport. And it has been in the Olympics since 1908, when the Winter Olympics didn't exist, and it was not obviously called the Summer Olympics. It was just called the Olympics, and they did all the skating events at indoor arenas, and it started in 1908. Now that's the oldest sport. Look, the Olympic Committee even the other day was suggesting that they get rid of wrestling. Well, I mean, come on. Wrestling is the iconic original sport from Greek and Roman times. I mean, it's almost like saying that. So what if figure skating has music and choreography and costuming and all that sort of thing? That's it's a performance, and it is a theatrical performance. And anybody that says it doesn't belong in the Olympics will force me to hit the quiet button.
Okay. Well, about 12 years ago at the Olympics, we had a bit of a surprise as we watched the Canadian pairs of Jamie Salle and David Pelletier skate a flawless performance, and then they received their marks. And let's take a listen to what happened.
This was better skated. That's why it's only just a little bit ahead. But look at this presentation mark.
Comes down to the second mark. Oh!
The placements.
How did that happen?
Oh, the placements. Look at this.
How did that happen?
No.
They won that program.
Five twos and four number ones.
They won that program. I there's not a doubt with anyone in the place except for maybe a few judges.
Wow.
That will be debated forever.
Second place.
So what we heard there was the results of the judges' scores coming in and hearing that the Canadian pair had just won the silver medal, although everyone thought that they had won the gold. And so then began a process of reform and an overhaul in the judging system, Dick Button.
Well, what happened there was that that was the result of a fixing situation. Didier Gayeguet, the president of the French Federation, who was suspended for 3 years, by the way, after this scandal broke, and is now back as president of the French Skating Federation and is even in the position of running for the president of the presidency of the ISU when it becomes available in the next few years. Give me a break, folk. But that's what this sport has been. This sport, I've got – there's about 46 directions we can go in this conversation. And I don't really let me just tell you the French lady, Madame Lagunia, who broke down under the pressure and explained that she had been pressured to vote this way. It was a scandal, and it was about time that the thing changed, that it be addressed. However, the head of the ISU is a man named Ottavio Cinquanta. And Ottavio Cinquanta is an Italian and a speed skater. Now, all of the ISU controls two sports, speed skating and figure skating. Speed skating doesn't make any money. Figure skating does. Figure skating is given to the speed skating federations as well. Ottavio Cinquanta has said many times, I am a speed skater. I know nothing about figure skating. Hello. This is a figure skating sport. At any rate, the figure skating world was then in a turmoil because of this public scandal in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And Ottavio Cinquanta was probably, I have to assume, pressured by Jacques Roguet, the head of the Olympic Committee, to fix the situation. I don't have proof of that, but this is, must have been what has happened. At any rate, he developed a new judging system. And the new judging system is essentially totally 100%, 1,000% secretive. You do not know what is going on. It is so complicated and so difficult to follow and to know what anybody is doing that there will never be another Salt Lake because nobody knows what's going on.
Well, yeah.
That's the case of it.
And, you know, how has that hurt the sport in terms of garnering audiences and having a crowd of people come and completely understand what's going on and feel compelled to continue watching and comprehend the scores that pop up on the screen after a performance?
Well, I mean, for me, I continue to watch it, and I don't worry about the score. You can tell who's best and what the thing is. It's just a very sad event. It is now so complicated, and you ask and you talk about the judges. The judges are the least of. There are still two sets of marks. One is for technical elements, and by the way, just so you understand the complication of it. Under this new system, skaters first receive marks for technical scores. First, there is a base value given every element, every spin, jump, and step sequence. Other moves include a multitude of other twinkie things like twizzles, toe popping, bends at the waist, and flailing arms. Then there are levels of difficulty that you're awarded. A spin with one change of foot but no change of position, or an upright spin that doesn't change to a sit spin, has levels of difficulty going from a basic level up to level 4. Now, then after that, there's a grade of execution. The judges must assign a grade to each move of plus 1, 2, or 3, or minus 1, 2, or 3. That's all they do. And by the way, in case you forgot, there's also a judge's system, and they I have to repeat all of these facts very quickly, often to myself because I forget them myself. It's I don't know. It's just very complicated. There's a technical panel which determines whether you completed that well, whether you turned enough times in the air, whether you cheated on the landing, or I mean, meaning that you didn't get around on it. Let me give you a sample that I write about in my book, and that's a chapter, What's a Fall, in case you don't know. About 4 or 5 years ago, I received a communication from the International Skating Union, like 1,523, whatever the number was, and it described what a fall was. Now, you and I think we know what a fall is, but this described what a fall was. How many times, where did you land? Was it on the core of your body? Were you supporting yourself by something other than your elbows on the ice? Was it on something other than the core of your body? I don't know what that could be. And was it on your fanny? And if it was on your buttocks, which one, which buttock was it on? Was it on the right one, the left one, or both of them, or none of them? At any rate.
Does it really define about, that specifically?
Oh, this was a beauty. Then about 3 months later, a new communique came out saying clarifications, amendments, and changes to the previous rule. Now, when I was doing the national championships and narrating it at one time, and the United States figure skating was very good about trying to describe and help the camera crew understand falls. So a very beautiful lady came on. Her name was Gail Tanger, and she is a former dancer. She was tall, elegant, and very beautiful. And she came down and she said, would you like to me to demonstrate what the different positions of the fall was? And then she proceeded to get down on the floor and demonstrate what was happening. What arms did were supporting it? The legs were flying. The body was positioning. I mean, it was almost like she was a street dancer with the legs going every which way and up and down and in and out. And my goodness, there was total silence in the room.
Well, as we tune into the Olympics for the remainder of the events, what should we look out for? What are some of the things that we should watch for in determining on our own who's going to be a solid contender for a medal?
Well, I think you can tell by who's leading in the technical scores. And the important thing is to, are you enjoying it? Are you having fun watching it? Take a real look at every position. Many times you'll see a skater. There's one position in the pairs event we'll see tonight where the guy lifts the girl and she reaches back and grabs her her skate and pulls it up. So one leg is stretched forward and the other is stretched back. I happen to think this is an ugly, ugly move. However, it gets points. So just add all those little twizzles. I have a challenge for you, by the way, and that is watch the young single skaters among the ladies and count the number of times that they raise their arm above their shoulder. Pick it during the middle of the program, not when they're doing a jump, their most difficult jump, and start counting the number of times either the right arm, the left arm, or both arms go over the shoulder. And when you got to 20, you can stop. I mean, it's like drunken windmills.
We've been bamboozled.
Yes, I think you have.
Well, you'll be live tweeting the Olympics, I understand. How can people follow you?
I'm tweeting just the men and the ladies.
Okay.
And I'm tweeting essentially the short and the long program.
And how can people follow you?
On Twitter.
Okay, yes. Your screen name is at Push Dick's Button, right?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Push Dick's Button, www.pushdicksbutton.com. Is for buying the book. Mm-hmm. And if you watch on Twitter under my name, you will, and the Olympics, you will see that where I'm tweeting.
We had one person ask if your book is available as an audio version.
Yes, it is. It's a Kindle version.
Well, Dick Button, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and to help us learn the ins and outs of figure skating and about your career and to help us appreciate the sport as we watch the Olympics unfold for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dick Button is a 2-time Olympic gold medalist in figure skating. He's also a 5-time world champion, 7-time U.S. national champion. He's also a former sports commentator on the sport of figure skating, and he's now the author of Push Dick's Button, a conversation on skating from a good part of the last century and a little tomfoolery. Thanks to Bill Martins for directing this hour, Christy Taylor for on-air production, Paul Ruist at Argo Studios in New York City. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.